Hi, Ken here. In nearly all of our podcasts, you hear students asking questions and their interaction with me. Many listeners find these exchanges illuminating because what is being asked is often exactly what is on their minds. If you find these conversations helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand our website. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Living While Acknowledging Death.
Good morning. So, here we are, day two. And our theme has been, I'm going to die, but I don't know when. Which can really be taken as a paradigm for pretty well every aspect of our lives. There are many forms of death in our lives. There is, of course, the death of this body. But there are other forms of death. In the corporate world, death is getting fired or losing your job. Maybe your job is eliminated. It's something that's happening to a lot of people these days. And in relationships, death is the end of the relationship, which can come. I mean, the same paradigm applies. We know that every relationship we have is going to come to an end. Every job that we have is going to come to an end. But we don't know when. And there are other deaths. Deaths of a way we understand the world, or way we beliefs we have about the world. Death of expectations. Death of trust. Death of affection. Equally, death of enmity. When you look at our lives this way, or when we look at our lives this way, the whole thing is just strewn with death. And all of these, every one of them, follows the same paradigm. It's going to happen, and we don't know when. And because we don't know when, we don't know how, or whatever. But all these things just keep happening. And our expectations and hopes, aspirations, attachments, and so forth they do two things. They tend to create a view of the world in which death doesn't occur. And because of that, we often can't see the signs that change is beginning to take place.
over the years, I've counseled more than a few people in dealing with an end of a relationship. And it may be a marriage of 30 years, or it may be a relationship of 3 months. But I found that one thing is always the case. When a relationship breaks up, and it's not necessarily an intimate relationship, it can be a friendship, it can be many kinds. One person sees it coming, and the other person doesn't. And the person who sees it coming is usually the one who initiates the break. And the one who doesn't see it coming always experiences it as a lightning bolt out of the blue. It's a very good illustration of that, what I was saying a moment ago about the way that our expectations, aspirations, hopes, beliefs, etc., create an experience of the world in which death doesn't occur. This morning, I want to do the same thing as we did yesterday, with a slight difference. That's why I asked you to bring the pine cones. Instead of going around in a circle, anybody can answer the question and offer their own question. But when you've done that, remove the pine cone. Put it behind you. And then when everybody's pine cone is gone, then it can go and we continue. But this way, you won't be sitting around. You'll have to decide whether you want to answer that question or wait for another, or it ups the ante a little bit, you know. We are dealing with death and dying, so anxiety is appropriate.
Can we do it in our own time?
There were deeper aspects to that story, Carrie. One of the things that one has to remember about Nasruddin stories is that they point to attitudes that we often hold inside, which are absurd, but we don't recognize their absurdity. And they just seem utterly reasonable. Hence, he says to death, I'll do this on my own time. But that's not exactly how things work. I mean, I've gone through the same thing when I've been consulting and some of the business work, where I'm usually working with relatively senior executives, and one of them says, you know, I can't believe this person. She's not doing her work. I've told her that she's on notice, and she says, yes, I'll get around to it when I feel like it. And it's exactly the Nasruddin story. I'll do it on my own time. Well, that's not quite how things always work. Okay. So, I'm going to throw out a question. Anybody can begin. Come, take the microphone. Respond to the question. Return the microphone to the center. And sit until you have your question. Take the microphone again and ask that. Come back. When you put the microphone back in the center, put your pine cone behind you, and we'll go through the group. Now, Ellen has said, what about me? So, and she's balancing all the levels, because even with the microphone right here, everybody has a different level. So You'll just have to decide when you want to jump in. Pardon? At the end. Okay, yes. Just to be clear, Elena's putting this on pause so that on the actual podcast it's going to sound like this is a really brilliant discussion, people just responding like that, when actually they're editing out these long pauses. Yes, exactly. So, but I wanted just to put that on the recording so that people didn't think that, you know, it was just happening like this. Trouble with technology. Every technology influences the message in a certain way. By the way, it shapes it. Okay. So, yeah. To begin, when we look at a cup that is set down between two of us, we have the feeling that we are looking at the same cup, though actually that is not so. You look at the cup with your vision from a certain angle. Moreover, you see it in the rays of light and shadows that come from your side of the room. This applies equally to me as well. In a very rough sense, we proceed to separate the reality of the situation by entertaining the idea that we both see the same cup. This is what I mean by the fabrication of ideas. In the same way, we assume that there exists a world which you and I experience in common with all other human beings, that this world existed prior to our births, and that it will continue to exist even after our deaths. But again, this is nothing more than an idea. Not only that, we wind up thinking that we live and die within this world of fabrication. This is an utterly inverted way of looking at one's life. My true self lives in reality, and the world I experience is one I alone can experience, and not one anyone else can experience along with me. To express this as precisely as possible, as I am born, I simultaneously give birth to the world I experience. I live my life along with that world, and at my death, the world I experience also dies. That's Uchiyama again. So, we know two things. One, that we are aware, and the other, we are going to die. How do you live holding this knowledge?
It appears to me like a path, and the awareness is awareness of things that must die. So as one travels this path, they shed different awarenesses, like clothes. So if you have an awareness that you're independent and strong and can take care of yourself, that get dropped along the way. If you have an awareness about your femininity or your masculinity or the things that you identify in that venue, those get dropped along the way. My question is, as we're born, we're totally dependent and we become more independent, and as we approach death, we become more dependent also. Are these the same processes?
I don't think they are. We begin as relatively unconscious beings, learning about our world as we developed. And we don't have a lot of choice over that. The second seems like somewhat of a gift, as we have the opportunity to do it in a conscious way that the first doesn't offer us. This is a question that gets asked a lot on an academic or philosophical level. I feel like I'm getting down to it on another level, and I still don't have the answer. What am I?
I don't know about anybody else, but when I ask myself that question, what am I, what arises is sort of a body experience of not knowing. And I feel like that's can be a very big space. My question is, why is it that terror and a feeling of completely being overwhelmed with the fear of death brings the urge to cause one's own death?
I can't answer the why, but I think that FDR said it about the depression: you have nothing to fear but fear itself. And I think that the fear of death is actually, almost certainly for most of us, much worse than the dying itself. I know I came to realize this. I used to be terrified of airplane flights, and every time I would go up in an airplane, I just had this overwhelming fear. And then during a period of a great serious depression in my life, when I really wasn't afraid of death and I saw death really as a friend, I wasn't particularly afraid anymore, and thereafter I've no longer had any issues with airplane flights. So that it was the fear that was the horrible thing. So I don't know if contemplating death and getting over the fear of it takes away the way the fear actually governs our lives, rather than actually the prospect of death itself. My question also relates somewhat to suicide and people who are wanting to take their own lives, which is, it seems that to me that an underlying assumption that we all have here is that life is good. I was told yesterday that basic truths of the universe that we cling to may be the cause of great suffering, and it seems to me that maybe thinking that life is good and that everyone ought to regard it as good and therefore that wanting to take one's own life must be a bad thing may be one of these truths that we cling to that would cause suffering. So my question is that something that we have to believe not only for ourselves but for everyone else, that life is inherently good?
For some of us, there are experiences that are unbearable at the time that we experience them. And they lead us to want to escape in any possible way, including leaving this world. How can we die to the past, open to what is, and not attached to any view of what we must be?
I feel as if I've died to the past many times, with many losses and sorrows behind me. Yet each time, there was something in that that allowed me to shed and let go of things that no longer are important. I go shopping, and I don't feel like I need any more clothes. And I sometimes don't even want any more clothes. I used to love to collect jewelry, and now it's like I'm done. I always dreamt of a home, a big home, with a husband and many children, and the life that I grew up in, which was quite happy for the most part, and filled with things, not because anybody said we had to have them or they wanted them, but because we could and we enjoyed them as a family. My family was very grounded. So along the way, as these many losses and severe traumas have happened in my life, I've been able to die to the past as things settle after the many shocks by being with them and staying in my body and opening to the experience. And I think that in a way that answers the questions itself. Being open to what is for me has been staying in my body, not exiting my body because something in the past hurt me or harmed me or scared me or made me feel unsafe. And along with that stripping away has been the view and the belief about career path and home and relationship, and just about every aspect of my life. And within that, I've begun to stop and smell the roses. I see every flower. I look at rocks like I never saw a rock before in my life. I think this is particularly strongly happening for me because of my practice through Unfettered Mind and the death of my brother, the shock of his passing as a suicide or a car accident or anything, really. It is an awakening. So the question I have that I've pondered many years now, and that we're all probably heard before and familiar with the book written by Stephen Levine and Andrea Levine, is who dies?
I'm probably going to say the obvious. this mode of conversation. May not be particularly linear. But it allows a lot of things to happen that wouldn't ordinarily happen. And today we experienced a range from very open and generous honesty and to the deep questions which often are kept on a shelf, not touched. To humor and appreciation, different forms. But it all takes place within, we could say, a pool of attention and awareness. And that's what makes it a bit different. There are many, many things I could pick out to comment on. But they would just be personal choices. Things that struck me. Each of you will take from this those things that resonated with you, and I could tell just observing that different things resonated, and sometimes very, very deeply with various people. But I think it's quite wonderful that we can sit here for what is a bit over an hour and participate in a conversation which is both deep and an expression of presence or awareness.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.